Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomen. Right now, we welcome back as a guest the director for the Regulatory Action Center for Freedom Works. His name is Ken Cuccinelli, and he has some comments about the EPA administrator for the Trump administration, Scott Pruitt, and some of the deregulation in the last year. I'm Jerry Newcomen. This is Vocal Point, and Ken, it's great to have you back on the program. Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure, Jerry. Good to be with you, especially
sure.
on this topic. We love good news.
Yeah. Okay, so tell us the good news.
Sure. Well, you know, Scott Pruitt has been the EPA administrator for about a year now, and each of the departments put out a document on their various regulatory undertakings, and the EPA, of course, being so front and center on regulatory issues, it's already such a hot potato. Reading this document has been a breath of fresh air compared to the last 20 years. It isn't just the Obama administration. The Bush administration regulated like crazy as well, to the great destruction of America's economy and the opportunity, including and most especially of poor people. And Scott Pruitt's got a year's worth of track record of going the other way, of actually looking at what these regulations cost and to determine whether we're going to get an environmental benefit that makes the cost make sense. And, of course, we've come a long way from the beginning of the EPA when we really had dirty water and dirty air in this country. We really don't anymore. And so EPA's main focus, as Scott Pruitt has said, getting back to the basics, is to make sure that they go after those incidents of pollution that do exist, instead of spending all their time and money and effort creating new and more granular ways that you can offend the law by polluting what they would call polluting in one way or another. So it's been a complete sea change at EPA under Scott Pruitt, and a year of just tremendous accomplishment on his part.
Wow. And you say that this has saved about $1 billion in regulatory costs. How about if we just take a few minutes and you can go ahead and wax eloquent on three prominent examples? What would be example number one of this deregulation, why the law was put into first place, and what difference it has made to deregulate it?
Well, let's start with Scott's own history. I met Scott Pruitt as an attorney general. I went and campaigned for him in 2010 when he ran to be Oklahoma's attorney general. And one of the controversies when he was going through his Senate confirmation was that he was being put up for a position, EPA administrator, where he'd been suing the agency and had a bunch of lawsuits then running. So one of those was on the Clean Power Plan, so-called Clean Power Plan. The goal of the Clean Power Plan was to drive the cost of electricity up dramatically. As President Obama said very candidly, he told us that numerous times, right? And the way they went about doing that was, in Scott's mind, illegal. And so he and other states sued on that point. And in fact, the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals agreed with them and froze that proposed regulation in place. Now, that regulation was still frozen in place when Scott came into the position of administrator of the EPA. And so one natural thing for him to undo, consistent with the rule of law, is to back the EPA out of this regulatory undertaking that he believed was illegal. And he's in the process of doing that now. And so that's one item that's been particularly unusual in that the administrator of the EPA, Scott Pruitt, has been on both sides of it. He has sued over it from the state perspective, and then as the EPA administrator, he's working to actually undo it.
But if you don't mind, do you mind taking us back to Obama's time? What was the rationale on Obama's side? I vaguely recall it. Was it the idea, same thing like with the coal industry, we're going to punish them so much that we'll force them out of business, something to that effect?
Yes, it was. The Clean Power Plan would have prematurely shuttered many coal power plants. And your listeners should know that, just a simple matter of engineering, coal power plants last a long time. they can last and be useful for 60 years. And they're spectacularly efficient providers of electricity. And, of course, burning coal is dirty. But we've developed tremendous technologies, stack technologies and so forth, that clean so much of the pollution out of the smoke created in those power plants compared to 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago and beyond. It's spectacular. And what doing that would have done to the American economy was pretty impactful. And as President Obama said, he fully acknowledged this would massively increase the prices of electricity. That was part of the intent. They want to make buying fossil fuel electricity more expensive. This has happened in Australia, and it has happened in Europe. Australia was, quote, cutting edge on this, and their electricity can be 3.5 to 4.5 times what it costs in the United States. Well, you can just imagine what that does to the standard of living for every Australian and to economic opportunity. If your business is electricity intensive, like, say, one of the new data centers that are at the heart of the internet economy, they use about 40 megawatts of electricity a year. That's a lot of electricity. Yeah. Well, they would never go to Australia because their main input, once they're built, costs four times what it does in the United States.
Sure.
And for no benefit. I mean, we've been talking about a certain aspect of this. Let's talk about what those who advanced the Clean Power Plan said the benefit would be. Remember, what they were worried about was global warming. And their position, and I don't remember my numbers exactly, but was that by the year 2100, the implementation of the Clean Power Plan would decrease the increase in world temperature by something like 0.06 of 1 degree centigrade, assuming all the other countries that signed the Paris Accords actually kept those commitments. So most of the gain probably wasn't even coming from us anyway. And the EPA admitted that their measure of that benefit was, in fact, within the margin of error. So as a scientific matter, they couldn't identify a statistically significant benefit, but they were hell-bent on going ahead and doing it. And I remember President Obama's first EPA administrator, what was her name? Lisa?
I don't remember.
I forget her. I don't remember. But I do remember this quote from her. Economic consequences aren't my job.
Oh.
Wow.
Wow, that is amazing.
It is amazing. I'm an environmentalist for the benefit of humanity, not an environmentalist at the expense of humanity.
And the poor would pay more, you know, as you pointed out earlier.
The poor always pay more.
Yep, absolutely.
There are two areas of life that are inescapable where that's true: energy and food. You drive up the cost of either energy or food, the smaller your budget, in other words, the poorer you are, the bigger a percentage of your budget must be spent on food and energy. And, of course, we haven't talked about ethanol and how we're turning food into fuel with corn, driving up the price of food. So the poor are getting a double whammy in a lot of these regulatory and energy-related areas that Scott Pruitt, not in the ethanol area, but in the clean power plan side, is looking to roll back and to undo and to bring the EPA back within the boundaries of its own legal charter.
So, okay. All right, good.
Real-world consequences.
So that was one very well-put example. How about two more examples? But they can't be as long just because of time restraints on this program. But go ahead.
So we'll hit another big one, but I won't be as long as it's the waters of the United States. The jurisdiction of the federal government comes from the interstate impacts on the economy of the various aspects of pollution they touch. And waters of the United States, in theory, flow from their source, wherever that may be, into interstate waterways. Well, the Obama administration had redefined waters of the United States to be almost anything that gets wet at any time in the year, even if it isn't a regular running stream. And What that does is, among other things, is it subjects all of those massive increase in the amount of land area to what amounts to federal zoning. Not like your local county or city zoning, but you're going to have to go get the federal government's permission, and you can imagine how quick that is, to do anything with those pieces of property. Again, there was litigation running because this was such an incredible overreach in terms of the power of the EPA. It is an area where Scott Pruitt has directed the regulatory efforts to back away from that Waters of the United States definition and to make it rational. And again, rational within the boundaries of the law. So huge, huge potential impacts avoided there with the Waters of the United States example.
Great.
And then we talked about Clean Power Plan. And then last, we'll talk about one where his hands are tied, and I wish they weren't. Scott has taken a position that I don't appreciate, but it isn't because of what he's done, but it's the underlying law, and that is on ethanol. I mentioned ethanol. This is corn into fuel.
Mm-hmm.
It's government mandated, and because it's mandated by congressional legislation, Scott has been very wary about going in what I consider to be the right direction, and that is reducing the demands on this forced ethanol subsidies. By subsidies, we mean the government's ordering that it be made, because it drives up both the price of fuel and the price of food, and now environmentalists even admit it provides no environmental benefit. So the only benefit here is to corn growers. That's it. But Scott has taken the position that that is a legislative mandate, and he doesn't have the authority, even though some of us have pushed him, including in person, to roll this back. He has been unwilling to do that because, as he says, Congress has to do it. I want to do it. I think it's the right thing to do, but Congress has to give me the room to do it. And they've been too explicit in demanding that these subsidies take place for me to undo them. So it's an example. I always think it's a good measure of someone's commitment to principle when they refuse to do something that they want to do because of the principles that they are applying in all the other areas they're working.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one for us all to get on our congressmen about and senators. It drives up the price of food. If you go walk down any aisle in your local grocery store and look at the ingredients, corn is the most basic food ingredient by far in what we eat. And we have driven the cost of that up and the cost of fuel up, and we've made ourselves less resilient, for instance, when hurricanes knock out oil refineries, because we have all these, what by any ordinary standard, are crazy formulas for gasoline, because of the use of ethanol in parts of the country. And that's something where Scott has thrown his hands up. And as a matter of legal principle and the rule of law, he's correct that Congress has dictated how that should go. It is terrible policy, though. Oh, boy, is it terrible.
Well, that sounds like a different discussion for another day. How about a closing thought in about 40 seconds as to the EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt and the overall job he's doing in terms of some of the deregulation actions at the EPA?
Scott has come in and done what he said he's going to do in terms of being an aggressive deregulator. That's been tremendously helpful to America. And the good news for America is these processes are so long that they started much more during his first year than they have finished. So the next year should be even better.
All right. And on that point, we'll leave off. Thank you so much for joining us, Ken Cuccinelli, again, FreedomWorks Director of the Regulatory Action Center for FreedomWorks. For more information, freedomworks.org. Thank you, Mr. Cuccinelli. Always a pleasure.
Good to be with you.
Okay. Bye-bye.